All right, I'm going to call the meeting to order. So making sure Joshua got the packet that Vicki sent out on Friday.
Yes, it did.
Great. So moving down to routine business, we have approval of the minutes. If you've read through the minutes, I think overall they were great, so appreciate it, Vicki. So I move to approve the minutes.
And I'll second that. The one thing I was going to note is that I think the minutes accurately reflect this. I think Jenny Vandermeus was referred to last week as an assistant district attorney, which is what the minutes say, but she's actually an assistant attorney general. So just for future reference,
okay.
I wanted to note that.
I'll change that in the minutes. Thanks.
We knew that.
Yeah, and I don't know if we need to change the minutes, because I think she was actually referred to that way, but I just want to clarify going forward.
Okay. Good point of reference, Josh. Thank you. Yeah, and Doug is not here, but I think he will be hopefully joining a little bit later. All right, well, there's an approved and seconded. Now we know about the assistant attorney general moving forward with Jenny. Any other items to note in the minutes? See none. All those in favor of approving the minutes say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Great. The minutes are approved. All right. Moving along, we have, it looks like, a few loans to approve. Rich?
Yes.
You want to walk us through those?
Sure. There's a couple from towns that are building new buildings, and one of them is for a large construction loan that they will eventually, I believe, take us out. If depending on the market rate structure in a couple of years, we may get the permanent on that, but they'll probably go to bonding. And the other one is for a town doing the initial planning on their new building. We have a couple of road loans, and then River Ridge School District. This is actually the second phase of a loan that we approved a meeting or two ago. The original one, they were able to qualify under their $1 million exemption. This one, they went through the petition process to receive secondary approval because the total amount was over $1 million. Other than that, they're pretty standard.
And did any of this, out of curiosity, did any of these loans come up after we lowered our rates?
These are all after we lowered our rates.
Okay, great.
In fact, some of them, they had prior applications in, and they started the process over to qualify for the lower rate.
Great.
And that's why they took a little bit longer. And that's why we had kind of a lull in the loans for a while, because a lot of them just, because they weren't, the time frame wasn't critical to the borrower, they were able to just start the process over and get a lower rate in the future.
Oh, great. Okay. Great. I move to approve the loans.
I second.
Great. Is there any discussion?
None for me.
For me either. Thanks, Rich, for your work on this. It looks like a good set of loans to approve. See none. All those in favor of approving the loan, say aye. Aye.
Aye.
The loans are approved. Moving to old business. So discussing the board's endorsement of the governor's biennial budget and BCPL's request for gifts and grants. Jonathan, do you have, do you want to walk us through that?
Yeah, we discussed this at the last board meeting, and it was agreed that we'd make some contacts with the administration. I talked with the deputy secretary of DOA, and he's been informed and registered no concern. But even so, I've softened the language in this motion to just read that seek consideration for the provision of a gifts and grants line or appropriation line in our budget. Basically, we would like to be able, as staff, to be fast on our feet, if you will, and be able to be responsive to much better concerns, which would include joint finance members when we're talking with them. We'd like to be able to say that the board supports the governor's budget as introduced and respectfully asks consideration of the inclusion of a gifts and grants line. I understand you talked with somebody in the administration too, sir.
So I had a long conversation with their legislative director on Friday. They were bringing this up today. They're actually still meeting right now. We were just texting earlier. But I do think the request for consideration, so as it's kind of laid out, is appropriate for us to vote on. So, because we're requesting for it to be considered, which I think is exactly what we want to do moving forward. So I'm okay with making the motion to endorse the governor's budget and request for consideration for a gifts and grants line.
I'll second that. My preference would be to just say that we request that they add a gifts and grants line, but I don't, you know, if this is language that people prefer, I'm fine with that too. I guess the other question is whether we want to wait. I guess we're probably 2 weeks is too long to wait if we want to vote on this. So,
yeah, that's why I'd rather just leave it as is, because this is, I'm great with moving this as is, and I don't want to wait any longer, because I think if we want to actually do this, the potential of doing this as a 999 at the end of the budget is really when we're going to get it in. So that could be after, I mean, we could be cutting it close. So.
Can I just add one thing, Josh? The fact the gifts and grant line, it contains, we can't spend any money unless we are given a gift. So it's not like we're asking for GPR or even for that matter to use any program revenue that we already have. This would be a gift or a grant that only after which is received could it be spent. So on that basis, the DOA Deputy Secretary thought this was just fine. Having served on Joint Finance, the issues don't surprise anybody.
Right.
Really.
Right. So I guess so seeing Josh, I know that we just had a discussion, but there was moved and seconded, so I'm okay with voting to approve on this endorsement of the governor's biannual budget and request for consideration of addition of a gift and grants appropriation line. Sorry. If there's no other discussion, I think voting on it as is, all those in favor say aye. Aye.
This is endorsement of the budget with respect to the BCPL, correct?
Yes, the BCPL.
Yep. Aye.
Great. Okay. So, so I will continue to work on that consideration, Jonathan, and coordinate with you guys on that. And I hope to hear back actually this afternoon. So. The other piece that I just want to bring forth under old business, based on our conversation last week, I know, Josh, we talked about two things with regards to kind of legal clarity, and I don't know if there's any updates. I know one was with regards to our role as a fiduciary in the Common School Fund, and then the other was clarity on kind of the lame duck and making sure that money is not going to the general fund, it's actually going to the Common School Fund, and, you know, the plan to potentially communicate that.
Yeah, so on the question about forfeiture money going to the school fund, I mean, my view, which I think I communicated before, is that that's money that is owed to that fund, and that the extraordinary session legislation doesn't alter that. I wanted to sort of ask about what process we think we ought to follow. What I'm sort of inclined to do, but I wanted to raise this with the group, is to ask an assistant AG to discuss the question of the board's fiduciary responsibilities with the board at our next meeting. But I was curious from the BCPL staff, in the past when there's been legal advice or presented to the board, how has that worked just as a practical matter?
Well, that's an excellent question. Most of the time in the past, the legislation was moving so rapidly that oftentimes between the date that legislation was introduced and the time that there was a vote on it, I would say at least 60-70% of the time there wasn't even a board meeting in between there. All we would have a chance to do in the meantime was actually produce a fiscal note, and we tried to make sure that our fiscal note raised those concerns, and then we apprised the board accordingly. The board generally did not get involved in a lot of the legislation that had been introduced in recent years. I'm searching my memory right now for a case where the board stepped up and said something. There were two situations, I believe, that the board took a position on. One of them had to do with the legislation that would have stopped third-party audits, and I believe...
That's correct, and they took exception to that section only of the bill.
Yeah. And so by them taking the position that they opposed that section of the bill, that gave us the leeway to go and talk to legislative members who were active on that committee with respect to that bill. I believe there was one other one as well. I believe that the board also took the position against the bill that would have gotten rid of the trust fund loan program.
That's correct.
So again, the board took action. At that point, we were able to talk to legislators. In neither one of those situations was DOJ asked for an opinion on those bills, though. Those bills were pretty clear on their face as to the impact that they would have on the Common School Fund and on the agency. So, unfortunately, I can't cite another situation in recent years where there was a legal question as to the legislation.
I guess my question. Sorry, John.
No, go ahead, sir.
Yeah, I guess I was just going to say my question is, we know that we've seen a decrease in money to the Common School Fund. This is impacting us, but we have a hard time forecasting it because we don't understand what's really in there or what's really going on. And so how can we manage this? Because part of being a good fiduciary and a steward of public money is knowing and understanding the financial forecasting and kind of anticipating of what that fund's going to look like. And since we don't have any clarity in that, at what point do we just say that we need to step up and change that?
So on the question of auditing, there may not be an update on this, but do we know whether DOR is considering an audit pursuant to its authority to do that?
I don't have any knowledge that they are considering an audit.
But we are meeting with Secretary Bark
on Wednesday,
and so we can ask him at that time.
I guess my question is, do they even have the ability to audit the unclaimed property program?
They would probably have the ability to ask the legislative audit bureau for such a thing.
Okay.
As would this board have the ability to ask the legislative audit bureau for such an audit? That was contemplated by Commissioner La Follette some many months ago in a board meeting. It didn't advance. I think there was a sense at that time that would not be welcomed by the current administration at that time. So I think it's the only one that I know that has the power, and this is certainly not a legal opinion, Josh, in my experience, has been the Legislative Audit Bureau to actually require an audit, and that requires, you know, kind of concurrence by the audit Legislative Audit Bureau co-chairs, typically. Am I mistaken, Tom?
That would be the only government audit.
Right.
So really, it's kind of DOR can ask Legislative Audit Bureau to do an audit, or we could potentially ask Legislative Audit
That's
Bureau
correct.
For an audit.
So, Jonathan, I had thought that there was power that the state treasurer previously had that was transferred to DOR in connection with the audit. So what are the details on that?
Maybe Tom could help me on that, because I don't know that the treasurer had specific power there.
So previously, the treasurer, as the administrator of the unclaimed property program, had a lot of duties with respect to that. And so one of them was to hire third-party auditors to go out and look for unclaimed property, in essence, accounts that had been quiet for a certain number of years, and the holders or the institutions had no contact with the owners of that account for many years. So, in essence, the state treasurer could conduct those audits through third parties, and then from that point, the money would come in. The state treasurer would then publicize that and make attempts to contact those owners, and failing that, would then turn a certain percentage of that or a certain piece of that money over to the Common School Fund on a regular basis.
Excuse me, Tom. I think I may be confusing this, because we have two types of audits. One is the program audit of how the overall unclaimed property program is being operated, and that was what I was referring to as far as it relates to the Legislative Audit Bureau.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have the third-party audits that were prescribed by legislation in the last session.
Right.
And the legislature gave no staff to the Revenue Department to specifically do that.
That so is my understanding as
those
well.
Those are two types of audits.
Mm-hmm.
So if I confused it, I didn't mean to.
So the last time that I'm aware of the Legislative Audit Bureau doing any kind of review of the unclaimed property program was, I believe, 2008. There was a paper written by the Legislative Audit Bureau, but it wasn't really so much of a financial audit as it was more kind of just a 20,000-foot overview. And so it was written more as a narrative, not necessarily digging into the details of how the program was being operated. And I can provide copies of that 2008 paper to the board members if they're interested.
So what audit authority does DOR have then in connection with the program?
The unclaimed property program, Josh?
That's right.
No. I'll try that or I will.
I don't have a good summary at my fingertips for that. I can put that together, but I don't have that at this point in time.
My understanding is that DOR has the administrative authority over the unclaimed property program, but that the state treasurer has an oversight responsibility that is clearly not defined anymore, because the last treasurer didn't do a darn thing. And there was a memo, Josh, by the Fiscal Bureau head, Bob Lang, when this whole thing was transferred to the Department of Revenue, that stated that the treasurer should have a continuing duty. And because the treasurer's salary is coming out of unclaimed property, and so they have an economic interest, but also the Constitution seems clear that the treasurer has a responsibility for oversight, and that's what Bob Lang alluded to in his memo. So Sarah is manfully or heroically trying to do that, and it's kind of challenging when there is no statutory resources available for it.
So I guess what I'm wondering is whether there is an entity that is empowered currently to do the kind of audit that we're talking about, whether it's Legislative Audit Bureau or DOR that we ought to be reaching out to ask them to consider doing this type of audit, or if we don't think there is anybody that has that authority?
I do not believe that there is a statute that expressly authorizes either the treasurer or DOR to audit the program. And so the question is there somebody that has the implied or inferred authority to do the auditing? And because the only two government entities that touch the program are the state treasurer and DOR, if there is implied authority, it has to rest in either or both of those entities. The Legislative Audit Bureau acts at the direction of the legislature, and even though the BCPL members can request it, I do believe that ultimately it is a decision of the legislature then to have the Audit Bureau conduct an audit.
I think it's the Audit Committee specifically, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, and just so we're clear, Sarah, is the type of audit that you think is necessary a program audit, or is it the third-party type of audit?
So I'll be honest.
That would make sure that...
Yeah, no, I think it's actually both, because the last time there was a program audit was in 2008, which is over a decade ago.
It was before the transfer, too.
I mean, that's pretty awful, to be honest. And then the second is, right now, what I'm really concerned about is that the fact that there's no third-party audit means that there's no accountability for people to actually turn in their property. And so I actually think that this is a legal problem because, I mean, let's just take a big box store is holding all this unclaimed property, and Wisconsin isn't necessarily holding them accountable. Like, why should you give up that tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of dollars back to the rightful owner when the state's not going to hold you to it? And we're one of the only states, I think it's fair to say probably the only state, that just doesn't have any sort of accountability like that.
Right, and so what I'm asking is, can DOR audit that? That's the responsibility I had thought was transferred from the treasurer to DOR.
Are you asking whether they can audit their lack of authority to audit?
Oh, to do a third party.
Oh, to do a third party type audit.
Can they do a third party type audit?
Retailers or...
Can they audit for compliance with the requirement that private entities are following the statute?
I don't know the answer to that. My inclination would be yes, but I'd have to take a closer look at it. So what you're asking is because the entities can't be audited, can DOR or the treasurer do an audit reflecting what the compliance rate is because the entities can't be audited?
Interesting question.
I mean, I think it's an interesting question. I think what becomes an interesting is, let's say that DOR or the state treasurer can.
Mm-hmm.
The second question is, who's going to finance that? Because we have not been given finance. We haven't been given resources.
Yep.
To perform this act. So I guess that's my second question is that, okay, let's say we hypothetically are. The challenge is that how do we do that? Because we have to pay for that service. And if we don't have that, the legislature has not given us those resources to serve in that capacity, then how do we go about doing it that way?
So one of the things that we can do is request from DOR a report detailing the number of unclaimed property reports that have been filed in the last four fiscal years, and the amount of money that came in with those reports. Those reports, I believe, are due either November 1st or November 30th of every year. And so DOR gets these reports at a specific time of the year. I'm sure that they have some compilation of how many reports were filed and how much money came in with them. So even without auditing, at least we'd have some information as to how many of those reports were filed, how much money came in, and what trend lines look like. So.
Yeah.
I mean, part of the reason I'm asking is, I guess my thought is that if there are entities that have responsibility for some of these duties we're talking about, like making sure that there's compliance with the unclaimed property fund, it might be a worthwhile first step to reach out and confirm that they're complying with those obligations, and or to ask them to do so. If they're not, whether that's reaching out to DOR or potentially reaching out to the Legislative Audit Committee.
I didn't quite track that. Could you say that one more time?
I was saying to the extent that our concern, for example, is that there hasn't been an audit done for over 10 years, it might make sense to reach out to the Legislative Audit Committee to ask them to consider doing an audit, or to the extent that DOR has authority to reach out to DOR to ask it to act in accordance with its authority.
I think those are both appropriate avenues. At the very least, would put the issue in front of the responsible parties that could make that request. I agree with you, Josh. That's the only thing that can reasonably be done right now. I don't see any leverage for litigation. It's ultimately a political solution through legislation to reconnect the third-party audits, if that's deemed desirable. I don't think it will be by this legislature.
I mean, the only other, as we go down this path is that, we know what, 1% of the unclaimed property account is reserved for administration purposes. Like, there is a formula in which, a certain percentage, I think it's 1% or 2%, something like that, goes to administrative operation of unclaimed property. We know currently there's about $3 million in that account for operations. So I guess that could be potentially an interesting another way in which to finance this through DOR or my office, if it's a program revenue account, is using that operations account for unclaimed property. But I think it's going to have to be a creative solution like this to probably get to that.
I would agree that this is going to take creativity. I find it interesting when you talk about it, when we talk about percentages of accounts, that 2008 audit shocked me quite a bit because you don't have to read too far in when the report starts talking about hundreds of millions of dollars in the account. It shocked me that the Audit Bureau did not seem to understand the difference between an asset and a liability, because there were hundreds of millions of dollars of potential claims, but there certainly weren't hundreds of millions of dollars left in the account. And so I'm not sure how they still track some of this stuff.
That's fair.
Well, I think that's a good suggestion to ask DOR at the outset, and that we'll be in the position to do that this week. And then regroup about having DOR ask for an audit.
Yeah, I think it's worth at least finding out what they're doing to ensure compliance with the unclaimed property program, or what if anything they're doing, and how those efforts are going.
Yeah, because I think if DOR does not, depending on what their course of action is, I think an alternative is that we, as the commissioners of the BCPL, request LAB to do an audit. I mean, to me, those are the two. And maybe the reality is we do a joint letter together. Because I think that also would be really powerful between DOR and then the three of us signing a letter saying this is ridiculous. And as good stewards of public money, we owe this to the people of Wisconsin.
I like that.
We will make sure that we pass that question along to Secretary Barca this week.
And then I follow up with the Secretary the following week, so I think that's like a good synergy that way. Okay. Great.
So, Sarah, on the legal question, do we want to table that, or do you want to talk process now?
I mean, Tom, what are your thoughts as the attorney, as the other attorney around the table?
If DOJ has someone versed on this topic that would be interested in sitting down and talking further, I would welcome that opportunity.
Well, I mean, what we could do is have an assistant AG, and this is why I was asking about whether there had been a process for legal advice before. But, you know, there are a couple different things we could do. I mean, we could have an assistant AG, you know, consult with the board on our next board meeting, and then we would then have to decide if we wanted to go into closed session to have a discussion of legal advice or not. You know, an assistant AG could talk to the BCPL staff, or we could just sort of see where things stand with DOR, you know, and focus on pursuing a legislative route.
So I think regardless, Josh, of what DOR says or not, it would be helpful, I think, to have an assistant district attorney be engaged.
Just an AG.
Sorry, thank you. AG. Be engaged on this. So, yeah, I guess the question is, from a process perspective, what makes the most amount of sense?
Seems to me to be pretty efficient for that assistant AG to reach staff, listen, have a discussion with staff, most principally Tom and myself, and then see if it merits going to another step with the board.
I'm okay with that. So Jonathan's recommending, Josh, that an assistant AG meet with staff, and then you guys, they report back to us.
I think that makes sense, and then we can take it from there.
That's right.
Okay. Great. Well, I think this was a fruitful conversation. I appreciate it. So that kind of covers, I think, the other two aspects I was looking for under old business. So seeing that there's no new business, we'll just move to the Chief Investment Officer's report.
The only thing I have this week is that, you know, the stock market took a little bit of dip because of concerns regarding world trade. And that provided us an opportunity to dip our toes in the market once again. So, bought $2 million worth of public equity ETFs, and we are now about, you know, we have a target allocation of public equities at I believe 15% of our assets, and we are now at about 5%. So we're slowly making our
way.
and we'll take opportunities as we can get them moving forward. So that's about all I've got.
Any, I think, too, at some point when we get close to the end of the fiscal year, Rich, it might be helpful to even give us an overview of the portfolio, maybe like where we are with our school loans and did we meet those milestones. Mm-hmm. But I think that knowing that the end of the fiscal year is not too far away, it might be helpful just to kind of recap on how we did.
Sure, sure.
Okay. Any questions for Rich?
None for me.
Okay. Well, thank you, Rich. Moving on to Jonathan's report.
Yeah, you'll be happy to say that I have nothing to add to this meeting today.
Great. All right. Moving right along. So my report's going to be really fast, believe it or not. Just, I think, two things. One is I spent Thursday in northwestern Wisconsin. I went to Wood River visiting with one of our investments. We gave a loan to build a new town hall, which was actually pretty exciting. The last time they had a town hall was in 1916. It had no running water, nothing. It was all sorts of hazards and concerns. So the town of Wood River was really grateful, and it was good to meet all of them. And then we also went to go visit a school in Webster and talked about what we were doing in Webster and actually gave them a school check of $25,000. We are the sole source of funding for that school for all of their library books and their computer needs. So they were really grateful, and they put their big check in the front part of the school, so now everybody knows where that money comes from. So that was a great little shout out. So that was a good trip overall, and people in that community, I think, were really excited. And then the second piece that we are working on, Rich, Tom, Jonathan, and myself, is kind of what's our due diligence process with investments. So we've met with at least one group, and we continue to kind of look at what our due diligence process with investments is moving forward. So that continues to be one of our top priorities as an investment committee. So that's my update on my end. Any future agenda items?
None for me.
We may have a need for approval of those going to the Western State Slam Conference, depending on
Got
the
it.
Amount. I think we might be able to keep it down below that 5,000, but I'm not sure yet.
Okay. All right, so maybe, so travel might be a future agenda item. Maybe just overall kind of year-end high-level report, investment report.
Yeah, and I think we might want to put on the agenda possible purchase of real estate.
Purchase of real estate. And do we have a, and this might be too early, Tom, but do we have a land kind of overview or not yet?
Not yet.
Okay. All right.
Thank you.
So, we have a few new agenda items. Anything else? I move to adjourn.
Yep. I second that.
Great. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thanks, Josh. Have a good Monday.
Thanks, everyone.